what are you doing?
This is who I am now. I'm all about being a jazz musician. I've totally immersed myself, and I've learned so much. Did you know that when they talk about Bird, they're referring to a person? There was so much I wasn't aware of. I destroyed all my Celine Dion CDs. It turns out she's not very good.
Is that a song, or are you just warming up?
I'm not 100% sure. Let me see. Okay, that is totally a song.
Kion, this is awkward, but it kind of looks like you're just holding the saxophone and pretending to blow in it.
Well, of course that's what I'm doing. Jazz is totally conceptual now. Didn't you know that? Playing is so 90s. I mean, I may be a little fuzzy on the details, but I believe Ornette Coleman was the last person to actually play. And that was quite some time ago. Are you hip to what I'm digging, Kat?
Ugh, I can't take this.
Part of being a jazz artist, for me, is not being understood, so that was cool. Meanwhile, on today's show, the best jazz of 2014. And now he thought Dizzy Gillespie was an inner ear problem. Colin McEnroe. Wait, I feel something.
All right. This is, of course, the best jazz of 2015. The problem is, I'll tell you the history of that. We wrote and recorded that intro last year, and then there was a technical problem. It didn't work, and we were so mad, we decided we would use it again this year. So anyway, this is the best. And I wouldn't say the best. I would say our favorite. I think that's a better way to put it, because first of all, we really had to narrow this stuff down quite a bit, and there just isn't room in the show for all the terrific stuff that came out last year and all the things that our panelists love. So, but this is some of our favorite jazz, or some of their favorite jazz, I should say. Gene Seymour is here with us. He's film, television, and music critic. He's kind of the mayor, the boss of our year-end jazz show. Jen Allen is with us, pianist and composer, whose latest album is Pieces of Myself. Noah Behrman, pianist, educator, author, and composer. His latest album is called Ripples. I got Noah Behrman all over my iPod. I do yoga to Noah Behrman. That's actually one of the challenges of jazz, is finding a quiet enough time that you can actually listen to it and pay attention. But actually, I find doing yoga is kind of nice, and having jazz at the same time. All right, so all these people know a lot about jazz. I know almost nothing about jazz, but I do have opinions. It's a gift. It's a gift I have. I have opinions about things I don't know anything about. People ask me, how do you do it, Colin? I say, I don't know. It's a talent. It's not everybody has that. So, this is mainly about their ideas. So first of all, Gene, before we're going to go to one of Jen's choices first. But before we do that, because I know you put a lot of time and thought into your annual overview, into your top 10 list, plus honorable mentions and subcategories and stuff like that. And I know that you've been saying to us, even in the last 10 minutes, you've been saying to us, you really feel like this was just flat out a bounteous year, that the jazz crop came in big.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I could have easily have had three top 10 lists with all different things on them and could have sent them in to the NPR Jazz Poll every year and felt that I'd voted correctly each time. That's how great the year was. It really, and there is a lot of really good product out there, folks. It's so good, and it's no one's hiding it from you. It's accessible, it's attainable, and it's just a matter of seeking and finding.
So there is time for jazz gift giving still. You could get some jazz to give for your holiday giving. Keep that in mind. If you have questions or comments, you can call 860-275-7266. It will be a special thrill for you today because I believe, is Lydia Brown on the phones? I think she is. No, you're not. Okay. Oh, somebody else is on the phones. All right. Never mind. Well, Sarah Flaherty's on the phones. That seems like that would be a thrill as well. So, all right. So here we go. We're going to start with one of Jen Allen's top picks. This is Sarah Elizabeth Charles. There, I did it for you. See, there'd be no confusion about which name came in which order. This is from something called Inner Dialogue. Do you want to say anything to kind of set this up?
No, let's listen first.
All right. We'll listen first. Here we go.
No.
All right. First of all, I should just say I love this CD. So I think it is my favorite. Like, I have to buy it as soon as the show is over, CD of this whole thing. But Jen, just tell us how you relate to it.
Well, first, her voice is just beautiful. She's really trained herself, and it just sounds amazing. So that's there. But the production quality of this is amazing. And I think that's the sound she was going for, a really kind of produced jazz album. Christian Scott is on this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he comes into the end of this, Scott on trumpet. Yeah,
right. And the two of them, he's known for that right now. He's kind of going down that path, and he and her are very like-minded in that. So I really appreciate that. I think the songs tell a lot of stories, too. I mean, that's the whole thing is called Inner Dialogue, so it's about her. It's very expressive. And talks a lot about her Haitian roots and some of her
she's
nonprofit
also, she's
stuff.
She's from the mean streets of Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yes, yeah.
Straight out of Springfield.
Yeah, but she's in New York. She's on the Truth Revolution Records, and I think that they have an amazing artist on their label right now. So I really love this.
And Noah, one thing that I liked about this was that to me it's not necessarily a jazz vocalist album so much as it is a quartet in which one of the instruments is jazz voice. Mm-hmm. She's not kind of headlining over a bunch of backup musicians. This seemed the sound of this seemed very sort of integrated.
Sure.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, that's becoming increasingly common. There are certainly plenty of more traditional jazz singers out there, but there are also many like Sarah who are trying to dig in and integrate with the band in that way, be musicians who sing, as it were. There are all kinds of negative stereotypes about the musical proficiency of singers, and a lot of singers out there now debunking that.
Right. So, and we'll be hearing, I mean, actually one of, I think it's Gene's number one of the year is also by a vocalist. We'll be hearing that a little bit later in the show. But I just really spending some time with this, and that was Bells. It's not even close to my favorite cut on this CD. I really loved just a lot of things on it, including the title cut. So thank you, first of all, for introducing me.
You're welcome.
To Sarah Elizabeth Charles. By the way, all this stuff, all the names that you hear today, that will go up on our website later at WNPR.org so that you can, if you want to like pick up stuff or you didn't catch the name or whatever, we'll keep you in the loop. Yeah, if you need to call in, 860-275-7266, or just sit back and enjoy. So, Gene, I feel like the list overall, or the ones that sort of worked their way onto the show today anyway, we skew a little bit on the young side, but right now we're going to get some of the really talented old geezers who are a little bit closer to me in age anyway. This is from a group, a kind of, I don't know what you call it. They call themselves heads of state, but what they really are four guys who've really been around a long time and really right. know how to play jazz. Maybe you can set this cut up a little bit.
Yeah, this is what one used to call a super group, I guess. You've got pianist Larry Wills. You've got Al Foster, to my mind, one of the great drummers. Buster Williams on bass. But the leader of this group, to my mind, is the alto saxophonist Gary Bartz. And as I say on my list, it's not the kind of album that changes the world, but it does what it does so exquisitely well. Because Bartz has been around, and when you saw him, an old geezer, I remember when he, back in the 70s, was one of the Young Turks, you know.
That's how you become an old geezer. You're a young Turk in the 70s. That is exactly.
You are. And
that's
and
the gateway drug.
Exactly. But he's been playing with such great excellence and eloquence. And one of the things that Dizzy Gillespie used to say is that you don't become better by knowing what to play. You become better by knowing what not to play. And it's the spaces in between the things he does on this track and in others that really are so consummate, and I just got so much pleasure, just basic pleasure out of listening to this group.
Yeah, this for anybody who's sort of got a pretty traditional jazz fan in their lives who maybe isn't all that interested in hearing super new stuff or anything like this, this is going to make somebody very, very happy if you get it for them. So let's hear Lotus Blossom. Thank you. Okay, that's the Lotus Blossom by Billy Strayhorn. I just want to tell a really quick story, which is that when Billy Strayhorn died, Duke Ellington and his musicians recorded this tribute album called, and his brother called him Bill, his mother called him Bill, and but Ellington was kind of obsessed with this song. This song was not supposed to be on the album was supposed to be more obscure Strayhorn stuff, and then at the end, everybody was putting their instruments away and packing up to go, and Ellington sat down at the piano and started to play this song, and slowly Aaron Bell and Harry Carney unpacked their respective instruments and just walked back to where he was and played this, and it wound up on that album. It is, you know, Jen, for Ellington, this is a song too, Lotus Blossom, that he couldn't understand how Strayhorn wrote it. It had a kind of beauty that he didn't know how it was gotten at. And that must happen for composers and musicians. They hear what somebody else wrote and thought, how did you even get there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Happens a lot when you just hear something so beautiful and you're like, man, there's just something that makes you stop and say, well, I always am like a little selfish. And I'll be like, oh, I wish I could have done that, you know, because you just want to be part of that creativity and the beauty. So for sure.
And Noah, Larry Wills is sometimes referred to as the greatest pianist nobody knows. But the truth is, in jazz, there's like 50 of those, right? There's like 50 guys who are just amazing that they're, you know, but their names should be legend but aren't.
It is in a world where it's commodified as, okay, give me the two people who I should know. Larry Willis might not be mentioned. It is worth noting that he's got some Hartford ties. He played on some important Jackie McLean records in the 60s and has played a fair bit with current Hart School, Jackie McLean Institute of Jazz faculty member Steve Davis, who also put out a great record this year.
Yes, he did. We should some year we should have Steve Davis do this with us too, because he would be fun to have on the show. He'd fit right in.
For sure.
He's such a great guy. I hope he's listening. He does listen to the show a lot. I'm not bragging when I say that. speaking, Noah, of geographic locales, obviously one of the burgeoning jazz, white hot centers of jazz right now is Newington, Connecticut. So this next artist, he actually may be the most famous person from Newington, Connecticut, because like there sort of isn't anybody. But maybe he'll become really the most famous person from Newington, Connecticut. Joshua DeQuasman.
So.
This is Joshua DeQuasman and Brother Spirit. This is another artist who really is working with a pretty tightly integrated group of musicians. And this is somebody who, as a young fellow, a whippersnapper, came up to you.
Yeah. He's in New York now, so this is
not
a Newington-based
There's a huge jazz scene in Newington, but he's gone to New York.
For whatever reason, he's slumming it in New York. But I met Josh when he was a senior in high school. And the short version is that he expressed to me this ambition to be a band leader and composer and essentially come up with a body of work and a steady band. And he was determined to do that and wanted some advice on how to do that. And I, without being a wet blanket, I basically said, well, that's not usually the way it happens. You know, you pay your dues and you play in other people's bands and you work your way gradually up to eventually doing that. And I really have to hand it to him. We've remained close since then. I consider him at this point to be more of a peer than a disciple, but he did it. He did it and he's doing it. And he's writing this sweeping, challenging, but very organic sounding soulful music with this band that both in their energy and in their musicianship sounds like a completely organic unit.
Yeah. So, we should play a little bit of this and then we can talk a little bit more about this. This is a very sort of dense, sweeping work and it's almost hard to pull one thing out of it. But
that is true.
This is the title cut from Heartwork. So, Gene, this year Noah's Taste, I think, ran particularly in this direction because it's one of the other things we're going to play a little is also, in a similar way, I think, a work that connects a lot of things. Maybe concerns about the environment and spirituality and emotion are all sort of there in this one big, huge suite of music. That'll also be true, as I say, when we get to the Chris Dingman CD. But first of all, Gene, as somebody who listens to a lot of jazz, was this one on your radar screen?
It was not, I am sorry to say, but it yokes together a couple of things that I've always been interested in. I've particularly begun to see in some contemporary artists. One thing, it has a very 70s feel to it.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people have sort of discredited 70s jazz as being too fuzzy, too amped, or whatever. But I think there's a serious reconsideration of some of the work that came out of that era.
It sounded like, I thought Oregon at first.
Chick Corea's, Return to Forever, things like that. But that kind of percussive, amplified sound. But also the very thing you're talking about, the socio-political content, which really goes back far, its most direct variants have come from people like Max Roach, who did the Freedom Now Suite back in 1950s, and there still is that edge that a lot of musicians want to push forth, and I'm hearing it a lot more from younger musicians, and that's it's a promising sign because it yokes jazz to its time more urgently than people realize, I think.
Jen, to me, I'm a big Paul Winter fan, and a couple of Noah's selections this year sounded like some certain periods of Paul Winter's music, particularly, once again, the use of unusual instruments. I mean, like a cello is a big part of this, and a 19th century field drum is a big part of this. And this is also, not unlike Sarah Elizabeth Charles, this is also somebody who seems to be working with the same musicians, trying to get a particular unified sound from them.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing for a musician to have, unified group that you can work with and that have the same vision. You get a much better sound. It doesn't sound thrown together. It doesn't sound disjointed in any way. It sounds like you're working for one product, and you only really get that when you work with people over time.
All right, we're going to finish this segment out with one of Gene's choices. This is Kamasi Washington, who certainly is probably arguably maybe the coolest new face on the scene. He's not that new a face, but he's like somebody a lot of people found out about all at once. Do you want to set this up, Gene, or listen to it first?
Yeah, I'll let you in because if you guys out there own To Pimp a Butterfly, which really for me is the album of the year, mm-hmm. Of any genre. You'll hear a tenor saxophone on some of those cuts, and that's Kamasi Washington. He's done a lot of work with Lamar and other hip-hop artists. He's known primarily in that score, but he also came out of the Los Angeles school, if for lack of a better word, of jazz musicians and band leaders who had this very kind of high-energy, hard-driving orchestral music, and he's kind of revived that or really energized that on this album, which has topped a lot of best of lists. It, as you say, he was the hot name among jazz band leaders this year. And the Epic, it's a 3-disc set. There's a lot of stuff on there. A lot of it differs. It's not really new, but the energy with a lot of great jazz, I mean, there's something very old about it that feels new. So that's my setup.
Yeah, this is a release I really loved a lot. And so let's hear from Change of the Guard, or from the Epic, actually. This is Change of the Guard by Kamasi Washington. So that's Kamasi Washington, and First of all, we should say that not only is he sort of the big jazz sound into Pimp a Butterfly, but he's worked with like Snoop Dogg, who hires more jazz musicians than you might expect, and Lauryn Hill and Raphael Sadiq and all kinds of cool people like that. But and I sense in this a real kind of haute soul sound from about 1972. It sounds like sort of Isaac Hayes, you know, around Hot Buttered Soul period or something like that. But these big wellings up of strings and stuff like that. I really enjoyed this a real lot.
I just want to say quickly that if there's anything really hip-hop about this, it's not in so much the mix or the sampling, but in the blending and the layering of different things, the choirs, the strings, the horns, everything. That's what's both so familiar and yet feels so new about this.
And, you know, Jen, when we come back from break, we're going to play something about Robert Glasper, who's been there, right? He's been messing around with R&B and hip-hop and stuff like that, and now has sort of come back to, at least for the moment, a stricter jazz sound. But it's an interesting territory when you hear these jazz guys kind of go out there and work with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I think it's adventurous and kind of in the nature of jazz. I mean, this is a conversation we could have for a whole show about what is jazz, you know. But I like how a lot of musicians nowadays are kind of incorporating the sounds that they have grown up with.
And Noah, you know, you and I were emailing earlier in the week. I was sort of saying that Phil Woods, who died this year, was how I got into it. I was just a dumb rock and roll. I still am dumb, but a dumb rock and roll college kid listening to Steely Dan and maybe even, God help me, Billy Joel. And every once in a while, there'd be these wild arpeggio-filled sax solos. And I would go, wow, that sounds really great. What is that? And I'd grab the album cover. It was always Phil Woods. And that's how I learned to like jazz. And it is a kind of a gateway drug. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of Kendrick Lamar fans wind up buying Kumasi Washington.
I hope so. Yeah. And I mean, one thing that's kind of different now, you know, when Phil was playing on Dr. Wu and on Just the Way You Are, it was a gig. I mean, he played soulfully and played well, but it wasn't that he was a fan necessarily of those artists. Whereas for people of Jen's and my generation and younger, it's just more natural to it. It's not a crossover and it's not a sellout so much as an exploration of the full scope of one's musical vision. And so Kumasi can go back and forth between Kendrick Lamar and his own sort of McCoy Tyner, Pharoah Sanders influenced music, and it all sounds of a piece.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jen's going to talk to us about Robert Glasper, who's done that, and he's back, jumped back on the other side of the line. right. So this is perfect. This is a perfect segue from so many things that we were talking about right at the end of the last segment, because Jen Allen, you picked this one. This is Robert Glasper from the album Covered. This is him, his trio, really taking on some music, a lot of which he's already done before, but in a much more aggressively fusion-y, you know, hip-hop-y way, and now he's playing it straight up. One thing we know, I mean, I guess you've been talking a lot academically about fusion this year, is that Radiohead is one of the new frontiers, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just can you explain? I would be interested to hear both you and Noah talk about Radiohead and why there's some kind of harmonics and stuff that's in there that musicians get really interested in a way they don't get interested in a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, I think it's first their melody. That would be my like observation, is that their melodic ideas are not necessarily strictly in the beat. They're singable. They're really something that you can connect with. They play with the time. They play with measures. They think more like a jazz musician in some ways. Yet they're more in contemporary popular music. I wouldn't call it pop, but I would, you know, whatever you want to label Radiohead as. And I think it's attractive to jazz musicians because they see that. I mean, that would be my observation of Radiohead. And because it's covered all the time. I mean, everybody is
right. Doing everybody's doing it. And we had the new chamber group, Sybarite Five, in here, which is, they're not jazz musicians. They're chamber players, and they're doing these very interesting arrangements of Radiohead. Noah, do you have a theory?
That sounds legit to me. I mean, I think it's also just that musicians play the material that they feel is artistically searching and is relevant to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and that the thing is, that was happening to an extent decades back, but like Steve Marcus, a great saxophonist, was covering Beatles and Birds tunes in the late 60s, and it, for whatever reason, never crossed over, but it was different from older musicians who were doing that as a commercial pandering. It was really just an affection for that music and wanting to integrate it with what he was doing as a jazz player.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for also for you piano players about this, but particularly for you, Jen, because clearly you spent a lot of time with this. And this really, I don't know what I'm talking about here, but except that, and I wasn't really listening on great equipment, but it sounded like the piano itself, and these were live sessions in the Capitol Studios, I think. Not so much on that song, but like on So Beautiful and some of the other stuff. It just sounded like a really especially beautiful piano. Am I imagining that?
No, it sounds great. I'm sure it's really nice to play on. No, it sounds wonderful. I mean, I think I chose this because I'm attracted to trios a lot. But I like how they really took this beautiful piano, drums, bass, and did a Radiohead tune. Like that always intrigues me, how you're going to rearrange it or make it sound like the original. And he takes his time, you know. He doesn't go right into a solo or, you know. And I think his intention with this specifically was to reach an audience he had already kind of accumulated when he got his R&B Grammys. Mm. You know, he has a large following. And this is not like, I think this is a great album for somebody who's like, well, I'm kind of interested in jazz, but I really like hip-hop or R&B or something like that. And like, they can, I don't know, they can touch this in a little bit easier way. I think it's great.
Yeah. So we're going to go just because I have to keep on the march here because of time. So first of all, Jen Allen and Noah Behrman are in studio with us. They are Connecticut-based musicians, composers. With us also from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia is Gene Seymour. He's the mayor. He's the boss. I guess fusion-wise, he'd be the Moss of the annual jazz
show. That sounds right.
He's the Moss growing on the tree that is our annual jazz show. So this was – I don't know how ordinal you are about this, but this was the number one record, at least listed on your annual list. And it's you know, like a lot of people in jazz, you sometimes have a slightly ambivalent relationship with jazz vocalists. And this is a little bit, this isn't like Sarah Elizabeth Charles. This is Cecile McLaurin-Salvin. And she tends to do albums where she's covering songs that you know, as opposed to developing organic music with, you know, with a quartet. So what won you over? I know you've liked her in the past, too. I think you had her in a previous
In a way, the number one ranking is in part penance for whiffing on her debut a couple of years back when she was a mere child of 24 years old and came out with this incredible self-possessed style of vocalizing, which seemed to bring everything together, everything from not just the technical aspects, just the feeling that she had. And I mean, to arrive fully formed like that just kind of blew me away. And I missed her the first time And I thought, well, she can always come back with a similar compilation of standards and do the same thing. But she does something incredibly bold and daring on this new album, which is called For One to Love. It's a concept album, much in the way that Frank Sinatra's Only the Lonely and September in My Years were concept albums. There's a theme involved, and the theme is one, the way I put it in my list is like she's kind of refracting the male gaze through the prism of these different songs. I mean, one of the tracks that she wrote, in fact, that she does her own compositions here, there's a track called Look at Me, which kind of gives away the game. But she also has things like The Stepsister's Lament from Cinderella, the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, which is totally about what it's like to be, why is the fellow looking at her and not at me? And the track that I chose, Wives and Lovers, also has that. She's not just playing with the melody, but she's thinking through what it means, what the male singer who usually sings those lyrics, Jack Jones, many years ago, is really saying about being that woman. And it's just the concept. I mean, she could sing anything, you know, that she wants to and make it sound beautiful and exciting, but it's the thought and the strategy behind this that really excited me about this.
Yeah, so this is a song, it's a Bacharach David song, which actually Jack Jones had a big hit with it, although they actually did their first pressing of it. They did it with Dionne Warwick, kind of as a wise woman giving advice. But the advice is so tone deaf to modern sexual politics that like nobody played this song for 25 years. From about 1970 to 1995, nobody did it for any reason whatsoever. But it's coming back a little bit. Here it is right now.
Your makeup. Soon he will open the door. Don't think because there's a ring on your finger, you needn't try anymore. For wives should
All right, that's Cecilia McLaurin-Salvin, who's been very much the kind of flavor of the decade almost now with these two. I like this one so much better, Gene. I don't know. It's like she kind of, I felt like the first time around she was really trying to channel Billie Holiday and Madeline Peru.
Right.
And she sounds much more like herself on this.
It's unusual for a singer to sort of declare, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. That's what I thought was exciting about it.
Yeah, I think I really like the CD a lot better than the first one. Here's AJ from Stanford. Hi, AJ. You're on the air.
Hello, my friend. I'm finding that the jazz idiom is evolving again into other genres, in the sense that Langston Hughes was using jazz rhythms in his work. I'm presently reading a book called Jazz Stories from Katrina to Connecticut. And in this particular book, you know, every microfiction, it's not necessarily about jazz or its players, but the construct of the work seemed to reflect, to me at least, the essence of the jazz experience. Because as the author uses these extended improvisational word riffs, then there's his multi-pattern phrasings, and then there's these linguistic solos that he does in the same sense as Langston Hughes did with his poem called Motto, I Play It Cool and Dig All Jive.
Yeah,
that's the reason I stay alive.
This sounds great.
Live and learn and dig and be dug in return.
Say the name of the book again.
Stories from Katrina to Connecticut. Thank you.
That sounds fabulous. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Jazz Stories from Katrina to Connecticut. So speaking of all the directions jazz can move in, Noah, we've got one of yours coming up here, Chris Dingman. He actually appears on another song that we're going to play a little bit later on somebody else's work. He's a vibes player, right?
Vibes player, composer, co-director of a nonprofit called Inner Arts Initiative, which put out this record. He runs that along with his wife, Zanetta Sykes, who's also a percussionist. And yeah, this is my number one record of 2015. It's with all due respect to Kamasi Washington, this record is epic.
This is the other one I thought sounded a little bit like Paul Winter at times. It's from the subliminal and the sublime. It's another one of these sprawling suites too, right? It's a really kind of integrated, total 62-minute piece of music.
That's right. I was fortunate enough to hear it the weekend that he premiered it live, and it was an utterly transporting experience. Chris is a very mature, soulful, communicative composer, and he and the rest of the players in his band are rock solid.
I don't know if it's on this cut, but Lauren Stillman on sax actually sounds a couple of times a little bit like Paul Winter. All right, here we go.
And the winner of the Colin McEnroe Show Jazz Musician of the Year, Kenny G, who let Steve Harvey handle the ballots this year. Today's show was produced by Colin McEnroe and me, Kyone Wolf. The part of Betsy Kaplan was played by Lydia Brown. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. Our interns are Nate Gagnon and Sarah Flaherty. The part of Bill Curry was played by Hootie Marsalis. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Here and Now staff snapping their fingers, visit our website WNPR.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, there's a robot waiting to take your job. And now, back to Colin.
Okay, we almost have to go into sort of lightning round mode here because we're running out of time. But our jazz mavens are here in the studio with me. Our keyboardists and composers, Noah Behrman and Jen Allen, joining us from Philadelphia is the boss, the mayor, critic Gene Seymour. So these are some of our favorite jazz releases of the year. This one's by Ike Sturm. So I have to say, Ike Sturm and Evergreen, actually. This is another sort of ensemble. Here's a big reveal. Jen and I go to the same church, and this recording is a really, really deeply spiritual recording. I think it's he's the music director at St. Peter Church in Midtown Manhattan, right?
Yeah. And it's the album is very meditative, but also very joyful. I mean, I really feel inspired when I listen to it. It's arranged well. The musicians are top notch. Like, there's just the music's great. I think it's a different one. That's why I picked it, so it could kind of fit into a different category of just you don't have to be spiritual to like this. Mm. I think it can really connect to a lot of different people. But if you are, I think you'd probably get even more out of it.
Right. So Noah likes Chris Dingman. He's a part of the ensemble here. You may hear him on Vibes. This is Origins from Shelter of the Trees. This would be one of the other ones that I really, really loved. And this is, I think, like a 9-piece ensemble, including 3 vocalists. Mm-hmm. It's just really beautiful music. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna move over to I forget who has Josh Evans. Who's that?
That's mine.
That's you again. All right. Yeah. So Josh Evans. This is also he's straight out of Hartford too, right?
Yeah, that's another reason why I picked this. Well, Josh is probably one of the best trumpeters on the scene right now. You go to New York, if you go to see any show, it's very likely you might see Josh. He plays with everybody, and he leads a big band that's played at Dizzy's and other places. And a great musician, a great writer, a great arranger, and this is his second album. This song is not new to – it was on his first album, but I feel like it's even more developed on this album because he has Abe A. Burton and Eric McPherson on this, who are other Hartford people. And you get a real Hartford sound to this, and I love it.
All right. It's the Hartford sound. Let's hear a little bit of this is Chronic Mistakes from Hope and Despair by Josh Evans. All right, Josh Evans reminding us that Hartford is Jackie McLean's town still. All right, so I'm sorry to be speeding by this. So I'd like to discuss these a little bit more. We discussed some of the earlier cuts, but we're not going to get them all in. So, Mr. Mayor, it's time for you to pronounce this somewhat difficult name.
Yes, let me take a deep breath here. Rudresh Manhanthapa is an alto saxophonist. He's American, but he has Indian roots. For some time now, he's been using those roots to sort of reshape and remake jazz idioms from this country. And this album, which, by the way, is a winner or a co-winner for Best Album by the NPR Jazz Critics Poll this year, called Bird Calls, as you might guess from the title, it's a tribute to Charlie Parker. But what he does here isn't just play the same things or play music that's associated with Charlie Parker. He carries and extends the very nature of Parker's innovations to do something totally different. I'm just going to sing, I'll try to sing, the fanfare from Parker's Mood. Da, 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 da. On this track you're going to play, you're going to hear what he does with it. Thank you. On this track, I am the mayor. What he does is take that theme and extend it into almost an incantation. You'll hear this in the track, so go ahead. It's
all right, here we go. All right, so that's Rudresh Manhanthapa, this is what Tylene is thinking. If you found that a little imposing and hard to get into, I would recommend a cut. You can find it like on YouTube or something called Chillin' from the same CD that just got some wild trumpet playing at the beginning. So Noah Behrman, if we were in that fabulous Wesleyan music program, we'd know all about Carnatic music, which is the Indian classical music, which clearly is infusing this. I mean, if people go to yoga studios to kirtan night and sing kirtan, they're singing music that's derived from the same thing. But it is kind of interesting the way he's trying to fit sort of the Charlie Parker influence together with that sound.
Sure. Well, there's a sort of wave of musicians in that age bracket, including Vijay Iyer and Sonny Jain, who are combining aspects of Indian music with all of the other influences that they're bringing to the table.
All right. So you get the last cut of the day, Noah Behrman. It's going to be Pete Rodriguez. You've got about a minute or so to – yeah, a little bit more than a minute to set him up.
Okay. Well, so Pete is the son of Pete El Conde Rodriguez, who is a very important salsa singer. And I think Pete's done – full disclosure, I've known Pete the Younger for – over 20 years now, and he's got a very unique sound as a trumpet player and as a composer, really authoritative at both, and he's figured out how to integrate his father's music into his own concept and his band. It's interesting how it ties into how many releases there are we can't talk about. Luis Perdomo, the pianist, plays on a bunch of great records from this year, including his own Controlling Ear Unit record 22. The bassist, Ricky Rodriguez, plays on Joe Locke's Love is a Pendulum, which is one of my favorite records. Rudy Royston, the drummer, was on the track we just listened to, and J.D. Allen's record, and Dave Douglas's record, and so on and so forth. It's sort of a cornucopia. And Pete's actually an Austin-based musician, although he comes and plays in New York somewhat often.
All right. You're going to hear, first of all, thanks to Kion Wolf, who does – you wouldn't believe the amount of work that Kion Wolf has to do for this particular show. It's a lot of work. Lydia Brown, all-star, coming in to help us out as well. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to our wonderful guests here, too, Jen Allen, Noah Behrman, and Gene Seymour, the mayor. Let's go out with Pete Rodriguez. This is from El Conde Negro.
And this is a song actually made famous by his father.
All right.
For what it's worth.
Soy la ley.